All right. Another Monday morning. Leave it to Terry for Cummins. Do the job. Right now, the gas prices are lower than per gallon. It's a little, not a ton. And so I filled up in, I came back to Clovis last night. Took a whole bunch of pictures. Try to improve the website. I don't want to do the website. It's there. You can do it. You can get weird about it. You know, make it happen. Well, regardless, this is going to be a full week here, and then we're going to go, we're sliding into the Labor Day weekend. So I got 3-day weekend coming up. That's something to kind of look forward to. Yeah, you got to find joy in the things that you can see coming. That's kind of a fun thing, I think. So there we go. Wrong gear. When I would leave, the sun would actually be a little bit up. Now it's still technically twilight. The sun's not yet reached the horizon yet, but you can see just fine. So to prevent a repeat of this last week, let me tell you. Time passes pretty fast, but things from just a week ago are so far in the past, it's almost uncanny. Anyway, so go ahead and turn off the headlights. I read a couple of articles on the Nexus News feed. Now, Nexus is really weird. The weird news feed. Alternatives. And it's got health in there, a little bit of politics, but not as much as you would expect. It isn't like news by current events sort of thing. It's more, it kind of skews a whole different way. And I don't read it. Well, you know what? I don't read much of anything much. So it's actually not a bad... not a bad... piece of equipment. Anyway, there's a couple of stories I read. One of them was about, I'm trying to remember what the first one was about. That was clear to me. Not the secrets to a long life. Now, my patriarchal blessing alludes to having a long life, or at least having a strength of purpose beyond my normal years. That's interesting wording, and I really haven't done a lot of pondering about exactly what that means. For now, I say, well, you're supposed to have a long life, and my basic belief system. Which is heavily influenced by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and by the Book of Mormon. Has kind of this attitude that if you know what God wants to do, your biggest part is to contribute to it as you can. And one of the things that they do is they say, well, a restricted calorie diet. I don't know if I ever really consciously decided to do that. So many people do things and they do it over again and they're constantly thinking about it and it seems like it hasn't worked that way for me. I just been skipping meals. And cutting down on servings. Now, you know, when Lisa comes around, so this is taking advantage of the fact that Lisa and I are a little bit separated from each other. I don't like spending money either. I'm a really big cheapskate. And so... I'm kind of staying away from spending money. And food's a pretty cool way to spend money. Anyway, so there was that article I found on there. And then there was another one that talked about fasting that if you fast more often than they think. So there's things like the heart attack, kind of a paleo idea, you know, about the whole thing of don't, we just eat so much and we eat so awesome. And people a few hundred years ago, they didn't eat half as much. And they didn't eat half so often. And it was talking about insulin issues. You know, one of the great health concerns in these days is insulin. And Anyway, so I've been pretty established that paleo, since it does have a lot of carbs in it, you know, diabetes, I guess one of the ways you can look at it is by saying that it's a real, it's how one converts sugars. And if you just don't have very many sugars at all, there's not much to, you know, there's not much for insulin to do. And your body doesn't produce very much. And that tends to solve the diabetes problem. Anyway, I'm not sure I have any of the concepts of it right. But I know that the body, when it's not getting enough sugar, or when it runs out of its sugar stores, switches over to fat burning. It'll use your fat to generate the energy it needs. Natural process. One of the big things that makes it so that this doesn't happen is the fact that we eat so much sugary food, and we eat so much of it, that beyond what the body needs, it's just jamming it away into fat. It's not really a question of what kind of food you're eating. And their speculation was that it was when you normally eat. Like they say, you know, breakfast, sort of, whatever, you know, doesn't really matter that much. A midday meal is probably the best. You know, the bulk of your calories you should be getting at midday. And that's it. Sometimes take whole days where you just eat. I'm not talking about the Latter-day Saint version of fasting, which is no food or drink for 2 meals. I'm just talking about the eating side. Now, I don't, you know, my vastly predominant drink is water. Seldom drink anything else. Although, let me tell you, if you guys want to know the way at least I deal with my gout, now I had read the Natural Remedy book that my mom had, which was very old, you know, probably came out of the 60s. It was all about natural this and natural that. Like when that was kind of a thing. Look at that. I just cleaned this off, and what happened? I almost immediately get hit by a bug, and it's right here in my line of vision. Amazing. I predicted this would happen, and within 20 minutes, not even 20, 15 minutes of my 2-hour trip to Fertalis, I've got my, hey, I'm full of yellow stuff, and I'm going to explode all over your windshield. And it's right here where I've got to look. more than Italian. It just doesn't matter. You know, fight as much as you want to, but that's all it's going to be. Anyway, funny. So, I've been eating a lot less, and I guess as your body becomes accustomed to that, it's just like, well, you know, you can go a little bit longer, and then basically you forget to eat, and then, you know, it's close to bedtime, and you go, wow, I should eat stuff, and then you go, oh, why bother, I'm still in the sleep anyway. And you wake up in the morning, and you go, well, I don't have time for breakfast. You just go, and then your lunch comes up, and you go, I go down and get the normal size thing, which is all I prepare. Although I've been trying to be a little bit heavier on protein than normal. If you're going to be behaving this way, not eating very often, I think protein's probably the most important thing to make sure that you don't skimp on. And then, I do the two sausage patties, pork patties, and then I do, some broccoli sorbets. This is all stuff you can get frozen. But it's basically cooked or doesn't require cooking. And gets you through. And then I have a couple of those kind of hash brownie potato patty things. They're just dirt cheap. Sorry, it's going to be cheap soon. So, I get all that stuff. That's usually my midday meal. I'm going to do about the showers at work. I was introduced by John Hauser. So very sharing, very open, like. And he told me about the faculty showers at the Greyhound Arena, and finally figured out how to break into them. Start using them instead of the shower at home, so I can actually clean that and just ignore it. I run the water every now and then to make sure that the water doesn't get weird, and I keep the ceiling fans turned on. Once I stop sleeping there at some point, I'll turn the ceiling fans down to just low, just to kind of keep the air stirring. So the place doesn't get stuffy. So keep the place dried out. Anyway. So that's the way I'm going to go for the next little while. You know, always hopeful that I'm going to get the call that says, hey, somebody made an offer in the house. And you go, good. Let's do it. My real estate agent talks about that there's a fella who's trying to get financing to buy the house. And you go, that's great. Since where's the earnest money? And they go, oh, well, they don't have the resources for earnest money. And you go, oh, that's usually indicative of somebody who doesn't really have the wherewithal to buy the house either. You know, I don't want to, poo-poo anything, you know. If it comes up and he comes back and he goes, okay, I got my financing, I want to go ahead and proceed, you go, well, I says, then let's do it. You know, I'm not a bear to insist on this money, but oh, the sun has reached the sun, just barely. And I'm coming up on the, just jumping up on the cap rock and flies. Amazingly. Okay. So anyway, there's that. Had a bit of inspiration yesterday. These are things that some amazing people talk. And I'm borderline apostate. I don't want that to be so. It's always been interesting to me that I will hear the things I would say, or the things that are coming, will be, tied to here's the next conference, or, you know, something interesting like that, and you're going, oh, it makes it sound like they're almost listening to your recordings. I said, well, that's probably not happening. You know, honestly, my recordings are extremely obscure. I used to do a podcast of them. Now I don't even bother doing that. I said, what's more likely is that we're both that person and I are paying attention to the same spirit. And I don't know what that's supposed to mean logistically. Why is the spirit giving me insights into things that are coming that really don't affect me terribly? You know? I don't know if that's indicative of somebody who's going to be in the position of making, of enacting these sorts of things long term. Of course, a long time ago, now this still hasn't quite come to pass, but it's a whole lot closer than it once was, is that I thought temples would one day become just kind of an annex to state centers. And each state center would have a little annex in the back. where you would do, you know, where you would do the temple ordinance, and everything would be ready there, and you would open up whatever you needed to do temple stuff. The way it's running, it's getting a lot closer to that. Temple districts are still rather large. They're getting a lot smaller, but temples are often adjacent to an existing church building. You know, they'll buy a larger piece of land, and they'll put a church meeting house into the temple in the same way. That's started coming to pass. Now, what I may see is further into the future, and he's really worried that I'm being, you know, how dare I say, and I sometimes get frustrated because what I see isn't coming to pass as quickly as I could be. That by nature, the brethren tend to be on the slow side, although here in the last couple of years, ever since President Nelson became the president of the church, things have proceeded a lot quicker. Like, it's been a long time since I knew that we were going to need to get rid of scouting. In fact, it was almost visceral. I was a little upset that we had not yet jettisoned scouting as our program. And, of course, that's finally happening now. I am, by nature, an incredibly impatient person. And so, when I see something, I think you should do it right now. Apparently, that's typically 10, 15, 20, maybe 30 years off. What I'm seeing. So I'll talk about a little bit about some other things that I have seen that I think it is interesting, and what more can I operate with than what the Spirit tells? Some of it's common sense. You know, there's no rule to say that these all have to be fantastic, but don't know when it's going to happen, but as I have seen things progress, it kind of goes toward what I was thinking. My branch and tooth and carry a long time ago. I had predicted the need to do this was only one Melchizedek priest had approved. And we would just call it the Melchizedek priest led by an elders board president, because that's the one that has keys. The high priest group here in the individual units, that was unnecessary. and it finally happened here. And another thing I'm not saying that I'm unique at all. Nothing unique about it. I think a lot of people, that's why when people say, you know, there isn't a ton of surprises about how things progress, because I think a lot of people get promptings, and they're to a large extent prepared for it. Now, there's plenty of people that seem not to, because they're totally stunned by what they hear from the brethren. Anyway, let me talk about yesterday. It was about our church meetings, and this one brother couple was coming through. They were Utah expatriates, there's quite a few of those, and we meet a lot of them as they travel. Like I said, I feel like I run the Utah Cultural Center, and that's always been a little bothersome for me. And I think we're starting to move away from that. The church kind of functioning in that way. Been through that for a long time. So we got rid of road shows and the church ball and more of the cultural programs. The church used to be, used to have a lot of cultural things. You would almost every day of your week was taken up by cultural needs. Our church buildings, can I be honest about the design of our church buildings? Because this wonderful brother brought it up. He said they went to one of the nice ornate churches, almost a cathedral, in a larger city. And they walked, and, you know, they whispered. There's just a couple of people there praying. And they were whispering and whispered among themselves why they were whispering in here. And they decided that they were whispering because it was a church. And then the youngest kid, I guess the one that's the least guarded, piped up a little and said, "Why don't we whisper at our church?" And then he brought it up. This brother brought it up in church because we were talking about Elder Holland's talk at the last conference. It had a lot to do with trying to make the sacrament more meaningful, trying to make the whole meeting around it and us coming together more spiritual, more reverent. Instead of kind of a cacophony of things to be. And they're going, "Well, we generate a crapper load of problems for us, and the vast majority of them are cultural." And I almost said, it's almost... it's almost a setup to say that given these circumstances, the almost circusy social atmosphere of sociality at our church buildings is a pretty big number on being able to handle these things. And the fact that the centerpiece of most of our buildings, they go, it isn't what most Christians would call the sanctuary. It's not shaped like that. It's more of it's it's your basketball court. Basically what we would call the social hall. Now, not any saints aren't the only ones that have done that. You know, Protestant churches have gotten more into that. Of course, their worship services are more entertainment than they are worship. And I don't know to what level the Catholic Church is starting to kind of wander into that territory. And it's another repeat of inspiration that I've had it a few times, that we're going to be getting rid of these church buildings. And it becomes more reasons stack up why we should be getting rid of it. And it's been more talked about in different venues. When the reduction of church time was reduced from 3 hours to two, a story was told about one of the places where there's no church building, people have church in homes, things like that. And the story was told that this man tried to behave better in his house because his house ended up being being the place where the sacrament was taken, and trying to behave differently about things because of he was doing that. I found that interesting because I think more of the essence of the ordinances are much more attuned when they're not associated with a particular place. You know, this whole change from being more home and family based rather than church based is excellent because your devotions to God are not supposed to be only handled on a Sunday. It's not supposed to happen like that. And a definite charge leveled at Christianity in general is the fact that they only practice any kind of religion when, you know, of a Sunday morning going to a building, and that building ends up being their religion. Their biggest thing is to find a building to go to, and I'm glad that they still speak of a community and stuff like that, but it's always been, well, you're not going to have a proper focus unless you have a pretty nice building in there. People come together. And the coming together is important. That's something that Moroni shared at the very end of the book of Mormon. But anyway, so yeah, the getting rid of these buildings, I think, is something that's on the horizon. I have no idea what's going to happen. The brethren seem have in the past seemed content for changes to be almost glacial. You know, well, yeah, we'll probably get rid of the buildings, but that will be 50 or 60 years. You know, it's not going to happen while I'm here. And you're going, you know, I don't think, just as much as the rest of the world is changing of a pace, and, you know, and some people say, well, I really love church because it doesn't change so much. And, you know, it's reliable. You're going, I don't think that's even okay. You know, now, like I said, I am not one of the brothers. And so it's not my place to say when and how things should be changing. Here's the other big thing. You know, they say, okay, we're going to get rid of Scouts. We're going to get rid of all the other programs that we've been doing, personal progress and things like that. And we're going to replace it with, and they've been very, very reticent to say what they're going to replace it with. And and the spirit whispers to me that they're going to replace it with nothing. Now that sounds bad. It's like, well, how are our kids gonna get together and have activities? And you go, you know what? Said they'll get together for Sunday. That's where they come together and they support each other, they lift each other up. Anyway, I think the big push is going to be to get out into the community. One of the larger issues with the Latter-day Saint people, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is that they tend to be a little insular. And people who join the Church, who are baptized, the biggest problem for them is that they have to almost adopt this foreign culture, foreign to what they're accustomed to. And a lot of work in the past has been done to say, hey, you know, we need to find ways to help acculturate them better. And it's like, well, that's kind of the opposite of probably what needs to be done. Is it, like I said, not to gainsay the church leadership of the past? You know, God gives you a little bit, then He wants you to do what He can with. And it's not to say that, oh, well, they were wrong in the past. They go, they were trying to make something that had been built up continue to work. And you go, sometimes you just have to jettison those things. You just have to let them go. And one of them is our strong cultural ties. Like I said, I feel like most of the time that I'm just running the Utah Cultural Center, so that people from Utah, when they get a job or they travel, no matter where they go, they can go to their neighborhood church and they can feel like there's a little slice of Utah right for them. They can show up on a Wednesday night and they know that something's going to be happening there. And it's mostly for the young kids, and there's primary for the little ones, and there's this and there's that, and you're going, most of these are culturalisms. So that it makes it difficult for people who accept the Book of Mormon, and then they go, well, okay, I'm okay with the Book of Mormon, Then they come to church and they go, what the heck's going on here? What's all this garbage? Or what's going on here? And and you end up getting caught up in Utah culturalism. This move toward more of a family-centered, church-supported, I think is going to be even more strong. And it's like, well, what do families need in order to support? What does the church need to do to support families? And can I tell you what one of the biggest things it can do? It can jettison Utah culturalism. And help people find their own ways of worship, their own modes of obedience to the commandments that work with the culture they already know, they're already a part of. A lot of people are not interested in the LDS church because it's seen as this cult. And can I be honest? When you mix in the gospel of Jesus Christ with a heavy dose of Utah culturalism, it does. It smells and tastes very culty. And until you kind of reconcile yourself to the cultural aspects of it, you'll feel like an outsider. And they've been working on that a lot about, oh, you know, people don't feel welcome at these things and cultural this and things like that. And you go, you know what? It has nothing to do with the cultural parts of it. You know, don't need to do that. We don't need to do this. We don't need to, you know, road shows. You don't need to participate in road shows. Your kid doesn't have to go to vacation Bible school and stuff like that. Calling it FSY. These have been going on the outskirts of the church. We're going to start finding, and I think it's going to be more and more happening, the Spirit whispers, that how the church kind of runs out in the boondocks is how the church is just going to run, period. It's much better. Those who join the church instead of really kind of attaching themselves to a bishop or to local personalities, which I'm sorry to say can go off into a thousand different directions, and we end up having a thousand different churches and a thousand different places. And the brethren have said that we spent a huge amount of time fighting false doctrine and trying to convince people to embrace the gospel of Jesus Christ as opposed to some weird belief system that's been cooked up by the culturalism. And I see it so much more useful that the church is that now that it's really kind of simple for the brethren to have regular channels of communication with everybody. Now it's broadcasting, for Pete's sakes, but it's there and it's extant. We're probably going to be getting more stuff out in Salt Lake. Have more broadcasting from the brethren. I think beyond conference. The look-laugh aspect of the faith will become more and more de-emphasized, like I've said. I said, now, okay, I'm a literal descendant of Aaron. I don't know if this applies to me or not, but I think that the role of the bishop is going to become more regional, that there will be a bishop that having the sacrament being done will be something that is not done weekly. See, and that's going to become a problem because acculturalism is the acultural part is that people say, well, I've got to have sacrament every week. I feel like I'm totally empty if I don't have sacrament every single week. And that was not a regular feature of the church and its founding. I don't know when the weekly sacrament was instituted, but as far as I'm aware of, it wasn't a regular feature. Something that would get done, and it makes it more of an event. It makes it more spiritual. It makes it so that when you go to do this, it's more of a spiritual thing. Now that has to do with the Aaronic priesthood and the fact that I think that the very nature that has been built up over the years of what the Aaronic priesthood is. And these things change on a regular basis. But it's going to change. I think it's probably going to have a lot to do with I think it's has to do with my family and I. With this literal descendant of Aaron stuff. I'm not saying that I will be the presiding bishop. I'm not saying that even a member of my family will be the presiding bishop. But that these literal descendants of Aaron are scattered around the world, or need to be scattered around the world. We need to kind of move. And that may very well be not something. I've written an essay about it, about the fact that there needs to be priesthood in every part of the world. I think every region needs to have a descendant of Aaron, so that the sacrament can be done under these circumstances, led by bishops. So you aren't going to have a ton of priests. I don't know how much they're going to be a function of temples, but certainly should. These are the mandated physical manifestations of God's house. And these are supposed to be under the management of the Aaronic priesthood, these temples. And so I see that happening as well, that that priests will be handling and supervising, doing the heavy lifting of baptisms in temple. And things like that. Right now, I get a little frustrated because of the culturalism that snuck into the Aaronic priesthood. I think the Aaronic priesthood is going to need to change quite radically. The tasks that are set out in Scripture for the Aaronic priesthood, for the individual quorums, for the individual offices, are by and large completely ignored. That they're just really not there. And when they say that presidents are supposed to help instruct their quorums on their duties and what should be done, things like that. What's done around sacrament is okay. I don't see the scriptural backup for it particularly well suited, but, you know, I'm always amazed on the fact that I'll come back and say, well, there. But that there are going to be men in Aaronic priesthood offices. There will be men as Aaronic priesthood presidents. And I think we have strayed wildly from the mandates of the Aaronic priesthood. Now, it's not saying that such straying is not within the purview of leadership to say, and that it cannot be that way. I'm not saying that. However, given what we know about it, we've strayed pretty wildly. When they say the preparatory priesthood, I get no impression in Scripture that that had to do with boys and young men. It's that the preparation was for getting a people prepared to receive Christ. That was the biggest thing, and that the Melchizedek priesthood had to do with fatherhood and the patriarchy. The way this is done now, I don't mean to be rude, but a man should be ordained an elder, particularly until marriage. You know, preaching the gospel is not it's not particularly about Melchizedek priesthood's function, except that, and, you know, I really don't know. That is mostly a function of 70s and apostles, are to go out and do these things. The fact that there is church administration and things like that are, I think, almost a distraction from what they should be doing. Anyway, you know, people say, well, that sounds like apostasy, but like you're saying that they're doing it wrong. I'm going, no, like I said before, I said, it is trying to understand what's being done. I guess the biggest problem is that the church became very corporate, and so a lot of corporate ideas came into this, there became this almost administrative management class. The brethren have tried to do something about it. I think it has predominantly not been terribly effective, you know? Like I said, the local ward constituted around a geographical area and boundaries. It's really quite bizarre. It's like, I'll tell you something in my own family that bothers me. Is almost our family has a business meeting. And it's not bad that that's the business meeting. There is a spiritual part of it. But yeah, it's almost the watered down corporatism of the church. And the fact that that the first presidency, the Quorum of the Twelve, just in casual view, look just like chief executive officers, a board of directors, and most of those functions that I feel like need to be put under the presiding bishop. The corporate side of things. That's not to say I am the wrong person to run one of these things. Or maybe I'm the right person because of what I know about this. So it's like, you know what? Brother, quit thinking about this stuff. Go out. Teach the gospel. Go to people that don't know about the church. You know? Concern yourself far more with doctrine than with the logistics. So you guys shouldn't be worried about logistics. Logistics should be handled by the corporate side, of which you should have very little to do. And I'm not, you know, you're saying, well, the brother of God is straight. You go, no, I'm not saying the brother of God is straight. I am saying that they probably need to cut into the things, and they might be finding it very difficult. Right now, the presiding bishop is bizarre, and I find it vaguely strange. And when you go, well, there are bishops out in the field, and they take care of the bishop's role. And you go, well, why is there a presiding bishop? And I think that's something that people said, why don't we just eliminate that position? Just like they kind of did with the patriarch of the church. They kind of got rid of the patriarch of the church. And I'm somewhat, you know, my good friend Lyle Norris was our state patriarch in Roswell many, many years ago. And I know that he was rather concerned with the direction this was taking. That there was no more a patriarch in the church. There didn't seem to be leadership, that this was just being kind of sidelined. Not being not finding itself is an important thing. My way of thinking, the patriarchal blessing is a very intensely important thing in your life. You would take a long journey to go to your patriarch, usually the oldest member of your family. And that patriarch would give you your patriarch's blessing. And that all these things are starting to feel a little bit de-emphasized, that they're not important. And you're going, for the individual person, Jesus, this is why it's a problem with corporatism, is that to the corporate mind, it's something that should just be abandoned or be gotten rid of. And I don't know. President Monson was very board-based. His greatest love, you know, I think he spoke far more and with dulcet tones of being a bishop and how much he loved being a bishop and how much he loved bishops. And their role as father of the Lord was really great, and he told a few stories of his family. I think he was far more interested in bishops and stuff like that. He was very ward centric. You know, of course, the brother words back. We want to see the Lord grow. And you're going, you know, is that a bad thing? And he goes, no. So people coming into Christ, did the Lord expand? Yes. Is that the right focus to have? And you go, I don't know. Don't know if it was the times. I don't know if it was whatever. You know, the more family-centric thing. So I really do think that the youth program is just going to kind of disappear. And the biggest thing is going to be a big push for your family, and to a smaller degree, maybe individual, if they have some really outstanding talent or something, are to go out and to become involved in community programs, in community things. If your family really loves scouting, and this really has to do more with the parents, because we need to concentrate on family unity. So families need to do things together. And I think that has to do with these youth and children programs. We see everybody going in different directions. You know, families not being really de-emphasized by well, Johnny's got to go off to his piano lesson. Sally's got to go to her knitting group. He's got to go this way, and this thing's got to go this way. And you're going, so, and the families are just like, you know, they don't even have dinner together because other things are getting in the way, you know, all the activities that they're expected to go to. And it's like the family needs to probably pick one thing that they're going to be about and really pour themselves into that thing. If you're a scouting family, a lot of Latter-day Saints got into scouting because it was kind of band-aided. But there's a reasonable number of them that really like that. And they need to join their local scout troop. And it's a community thing. And you're going to run into other people in your scout troop. Or start your own organizations. You know, bring these people together. And, you know, that's how I would try to spin it to people, is that your family needs to decide what they want to be involved with, whether it's scouts, if it's sports, it's like a sport that your family can be involved in, support local groups, clubs, organizations around this. If your kid's really into soccer, or if you're really into soccer and you want your kids to be into soccer, do that. Join community organizations. It's important that wherever you are, you're part of that community. And we don't need to be going to church and becoming all insular. Well, this is my community. It's very important that even if we have to physically do so, we need to break that apart. You know, the concept of the church family, the ward family, has always bothered me. Because that's bad. That's not your family. And, you know, you'll hear all the anecdotal stories. Well, I was so affected, so, you know, my bishop was so wonderful. I think I love him more than I love my father. And you're going, but that's wrong. That's intrinsically wrong. It says, it's your family. You guys need to learn how to live together and to be a unit together. And to live cheek by jowl together. You know, our you know, families are dying. And you know what? And the sad part is, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, although they swear up and down they're for the families, they're one of the instrumentalities that are tearing families apart. You know? By splitting families up into age groups and stuff like that. Saying you're supposed to go this way and that way, and this is your sociality. Being a part of a group of kids progressing through a program, and you're going, you know what? I don't even know if that's a good idea. And we've seen they've tried something, and within a year or two, it's been abandoned. Just don't do it. And it's okay. We're still trying to find figure out the way forward. And it is, it's family-based. It's very, very intensely old. Very old. But it was the way things were done. You would take your family and you would leave your parents, go off and do something else. Now your oldest son may very well, because they're going to be the primary inheritor of what your parents have, but their biggest responsibility is to take care of their parents when they're old. And one still gets together and does all the things that he's doing. Anyway, so yes, said the primary reason to be involved within a community is to service the family. I'm sorry, I am a big proponent that's what a community ends up being, is a collection of families. and that families voluntarily enter or exit these groups. Now, is there a bit of a community around belief? Sure. But it's just one of your communities, and it's not to be insular, inclusive, cis-like. Anyway, so these are things probably coming up on the horizon. It kind of gets kind of a Jewish feel, but can I say the Jewish feel was somewhat more family-based. We need to hear that the Bible does not give us a lot of family devotion going on. Most of the festivals and celebrations were done within the family, in the home. There was no more larger communal things. There was the family home, and that was what religion was about. That's where your religion came from. The thing to honor your father and your mother was mostly your projection into religion was mostly through your parents. That's where it came. Your parents would teach you the ways of God. You were beholden to them for the teaching that they gave you and the culture that they gave you. And then you would do the same for your children. That's why the patriarchal order was so important. Did it center around the father? Sure. But knowing that there would be no father without the mother. And then this was the way it transmitted this. Once we try to find other instrumentalities, even a church, to try to do these things, these are artificial. When they talk about, I was having a problem because some young fella, Cameron, in Portales, he was talking about the absolute importance of his ward family because he didn't think much of his own family, and that was a bad thing. And I think I said him. I said, this is what's most important, is you having children and stuff like that, and there's too many people who are feeling like being a part of a ward was a good substitute for having a family. You know, I don't have to have children. I don't need to marry. I can do so much more service to my ward as a single person that's not so harried by family, you know, much easier for me to serve in church as a singleton. And you're like, but that's not what it's about. And it ends up being that way, you know. Oh, you know, we want to have the single sister as the release life resident because she'll have more time to put toward our organizational needs, getting activities together, stuff like that. And you're like, but that's counterintuitive to what the whole purpose of this is supposed to be for. society itself may be counterproductive to what women are supposed to be doing. And can I be honest? The church is presently constituted almost spends a lot of time heaping praise on people who are not doing what they should be doing. And it's like, well, you know, the person I look up to the most was the single sister who was, you know, the spinster lady who did this and did that. You're going, well, then how do you feel about your mother? Well, I don't really like my mother. Me and my mother bombed out a bunch of things. She was kind of weird about this and that and this and that. And I really didn't like my mother. I kind of keep my distance from her. And you're going, but that's your route back to God. Your spinster Relief Society president is not one of the links back to God. Your mother, your father. If you don't reconcile yourself to your mother and your father, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how magnificent a ward you are in, how absolutely just, you know, Santa Claus-like your bishop was. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much you love these people and how you just hung on their every word and how wonderfully brilliant and nice they were. It doesn't matter. That isn't your way back. You were not adopted into the household of your bishop. You just weren't. You just will not be. You have a family. Be far more interested in your family than you are with your ward. And that's why it's like, we need to pull back. We can already see that youth protection program. Being able to do things with other people's children is just untenable. Bad enough that society is also starting to attack parents and saying, no, you can't do that to your children either. You know, don't hug your child. We think that you're a pervert. This is practically incest. And you're going, oh my gosh, what are you talking about? And they've got a serious look on their face. You know, the family needs to be destroyed. You're going, I'm sorry. It says, we should not be a party to the destruction of family and to the support of wards. Wards need to become de-emphasized. You go, these are de-emphasized simply to dissolve them. And that states may very well be the more appropriate model. Far more able to be controlled. It makes more sense to be able to bring everybody together and do sacraments. Given these responsibilities, the fact that to a large extent, the house. I'll see it tonight. thank God.